When I lived in Seattle in the 1990s, there were two bumper stickers that I saw all over town. Visualize world peace and kill your television. So I bought one of each, then I spliced them together to make one sticker that said, visualize your television. I love TV. I think it's fantastic. On a great show, you can watch the evolution of a character, see how their struggles play out over the course of years sometimes, how everything interconnects. And being someone interested in mental health, well, the great shows have plenty to offer there as well. And there are so many great shows available these days. We're in a golden age of TV. So, you know, thanks for listening to podcasts. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. One newer show that I did not watch, at least for a while, was Physical. It's on Apple TV+. Rose Byrne is the star. Based on the ads that I saw for Physical, just the visual ads, I thought it was about aerobics. I saw leotards and leg warmers, those kind of braided headbands. I thought, oh, okay, it's 80s kitsch. And I'm like, nah, I've already seen The Wedding Singer. Hell, I grew up in the 1980s. Don't want to go back. No thanks. If I had known that Physical was really about mental health, I would have watched it sooner. If I knew it was about intrusive thoughts and eating disorders and anxiety, that the aerobics is just a setting for a very deep, intensive dive into someone with significant, untreated mental health problems, yeah, I would have gotten on board right off the bat. I'm glad I eventually got on board. It's one of the best shows about mental health that I've seen in a while. Physical tells the story of Sheila, who discovers aerobics as this cathartic activity, a place where she can temporarily feel free of a really nasty internal monologue. But that voice always comes back. Here's a clip, Rose Byrne as Sheila, right after a heavy workout.
And just like that, it's over. And you're you again. Just another sweaty bitch sitting on your fat ass, waiting for the next one. How long until you get back here? What's it gonna take? Get more time, more money. Time, money, time, money.
The voice often appears around the context of food.
Give up. You might as well just give up.
Cheese puff?
No! You used to be someone of consequence, someone who mattered. Now you're just an overdressed, over-the-hill, saggy-ass sad sack married to yesterday's news.
Basically, Rose Byrne plays two characters on the show, Sheila and this vicious, hateful voice that lives inside Sheila. Ever deal with one of those cruel internal voices, dear listener? And everyone's nodding now. I feel you, my friend. We're all in this together. The creator of Physical is Annie Weissman. Annie's a veteran writer and showrunner, and she's worked on shows like Desperate Housewives, Suburgatory, About a Boy. Annie herself spent many, many years living with eating disorders and making sure that no one found out about her problems. That struggle, that secrecy inspired Physical. Sheila, the Rose Byrne character, is not 100% Annie, but there's a lot of Annie there, especially in regard to eating and secrecy. I was intrigued by this idea of taking some of your worst, most painful experiences with mental illness and turning them into a show for the whole world to see with Rose Byrne and leotards. Annie Weissman, welcome to Depression Mode.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to talk about Physical, and we're going to talk about a lot of the work you've done, and we're going to, of course, dive deep into your brain. What was your life like when you first started working on this idea that would become this show, Physical? How long ago was it, and who were you?
Okay. I'm so bad at numbers, I never remember exactly how many years ago it was, but it was a while ago. It was quite a while ago, but I was already an established television writer. I had been working for close to a decade as a TV writer, having started out primarily as a playwright. and then sort of sidestepping into television. And I had this idea for a show that was a little more personal and a little more revealing. And I didn't think that I would be able to sell it as a pitch. So I decided to write it as a spec script. So I kind of went up to Ojai and sat under a tree and cried and then started writing it. And it took a really long time to actually find its form because I was scared to do it. I was scared to write it.
And just so people know, what is a spec script?
So that's a script you write for free. And for a long time, there was a bit of a stigma about writing pilots on spec in the television business because it was considered kind of unprofessional to do. But I think as television started to get more expansive and more interesting and more specific with the proliferation of different, you know, avenues for television, I think people realized that it was a little more like the way some of the more original things happen in film, in theater, that spec scripts might contain some of the more interesting material and not ideas that you come up with, you know, to sell, but ideas you have to get out.
So you're sitting under this tree in Ojai. What was it that you wanted to say?
I wanted to write for the first time about my own experience with an eating disorder. And it wasn't just writing about it for the first time, but it was kind of talking about it for the first time because it was something that I had been extremely private about for my whole life. And I had, at that point that I started writing, a lot of years of recovery under my belt. I also had a marriage. I was a mom. I want to be careful to say, marriage and parenthood don't fix you. I think a lot of people are under the impression that they might. I certainly was. You know, you think you, and when you're avoiding recovery, when you're avoiding healing, you know, you think these life events will fix you, you know. And then it can be a really devastating reality that they don't. That was one of the things I wanted to write about. So I had many years of recovery under my belt. I felt ready to write about it, but I still hadn't been open with a lot of people in my life about it. So my husband was one of the first people that I ever talked to about it before he was my husband. I think it's one of the reasons he became my husband was that he was someone I thought I could really be myself with and share it with when I was starting recovery. And he was, so I had that experience of someone not, you know, shunning me or judging me, of accepting me. And that was kind of the foundation of our relationship. So I had that under my belt, and I had a lot of, certainly I had a lot of experience writing a television under my belt, but I didn't yet have the experience of writing something for television that was really confessional and personal.
And it took a while then.
It took a while. It was a lot of stopping and starting because I would get into it and then feel exposed and afraid and unsure of it. And the idea that sort of sparked me, the way in for me, you know, because I say this is a really personal show, but on its surface, there are so many things that distance it. You know, it is fictional. It's set 40 years ago. It's set in the world of my own childhood in San Diego. So factually, it's really the world I grew up in as a child. It didn't resemble the facts of my life. So there are a lot of layers there that I was hiding behind. But still, it was personal in just the subject matter that it was dealing with that I hadn't been honest about and that was so deeply in my own life. And then also the spark was to write honestly about this inner voice, you know, this brutal inner voice. And when I started to do it, it was painful. It was hard. You know, I had to take a lot of breaks.
Because this voice was very abusive to the character that was standing in for you.
Right. The voice is tough. And the more honest, I knew I had to be honest about it if I was going to do it, but it was hard to do.
So why was it so important that you do it? You know, you could go through your recovery and then you could go write a show that's very silly and, you know, probably pick up a check for that.
Right.
Why was it important to you to go to this really deep, painful, personal place?
Yeah, it's a good question. I know, like, my husband would ask that a lot. He's like, you're writing for Desperate Housewives. You're doing great. You go to your job, you kill it. Everyone praises you. You know, you make a lot
why
of money.
You're good at the ringer.
Why put yourself through this? It's like the question of being a writer.
I get this question from my wife once in a while.
Why are you doing this thing? Like, here you are, yes. like richly rewarded for this other thing you do. And yet you're drawn to this very deeply painful thing. So the impulse to do that, I mean, how can you explain it as a writer? Just to kind of do the challenging thing, to tell the truth. Because there's a part of you that knows that that's the really rewarding thing at the end of the day, to be able to write something scary, truthful. That's where the deeper rewards are. And you know, it's just, can you do it? Can you get through it? I know I've had that experience as a playwright, that things that I've written that connect with people, it's incredibly rewarding when you get there. But the cost is big, right? The cost is tough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, did you set out to learn more about your eating disorders, about these internal monologues? Is that part of why you were writing it? Because I'm sure it happened regardless whether you intended it or not. But was that part of the plan?
Yeah, I think it was part of the plan, maybe not that consciously, to interrogate it a little bit and understand it a little better. You know, you just get excited as a writer when things start to connect, right? So I started to connect with, you know, this historic idea of the beginning of aerobics and the beginning of female entrepreneurship around athletics. And then so that became like a vehicle for me. It's like, oh, I can put this into that vehicle and then it will really drive somewhere, you know. But I think the impulse, yeah, was to kind of fill it with truth, my own truth, you know, my own experience. So digging down and understanding it better. The writing process is a little bit of a, there is a, some kind of part of it is like an excavation, you know, just like trying to get down to those layers. Even though I've done a lot of work in therapy individually and group therapy, there's still a lot more to understand and learn.
So in the show, in Physical, Sheila, the Rose Byrne character, is both the protagonist and the antagonist, really, through these internal monologues. Like, she's the person we root for, and she's also the bad guy.
Yeah.
Was that always the plan?
That's a cool way of thinking about it. It evolved into something like that when we started shooting it, that I don't think I thought of it that way initially. I kind of thought of these things as all part of her. But as we started to kind of bring it to life, I realized, oh, these are really two characters. I would sometimes think of it as this internal battle she's doing. You know, that really came to life, like I said, as we started to shoot it. And I started to think about how we were actually going to make this happen. What did it really look and sound like? But initially, it was just sort of trying to be true to my own struggles and battles with those voices. But you're absolutely right that it turns into something where this central character is unique in that she encompasses what you would normally have, you know, in drama, the antagonist and the protagonist. She's both. And so that's a great performance challenge. It's a dramatic challenge. It was all kinds of challenges. But yeah, that is kind of what's unique about the storytelling, for sure.
What kind of things had your internal monologue, your antagonist, been saying to you over the years?
Well, I mean, you can see a lot of it in the show, pretty brutal stuff. One of the things I started to become aware of when I started to seek help for my own eating disorder was how, you know, when it's your own experience, certainly when you're younger, you kind of think everybody else is like you. You know, you kind of think everybody else must put themselves through what you're putting yourself through. And then there are just these experiences where you realize that it's not, you know, normal is a problematic word to say these days, but that it's not normal, you know, what the way how hard you are on yourself. And that's what I started to learn, is that my own voice was brutal in a way that other people weren't experiencing. So that's to say, like, the way that I experienced, you know, looking at my body, trying to make what are ordinary decisions about eating, was so fraught with dark and difficult just internal criticism. And that was well beyond what other people were experiencing. And it started to feel like inescapable, you know? And I think that's where the binging and purging came in, was a way to kind of manage the voices, you know, when they got out of control. Then it's like coping strategy to kind of manage that increasingly difficult, dark voice telling me, you know, it's not just, oh, you gain weight. It's like, you're a bad person. You know, it's not just your body's bad. It's that you're a bad person. You're bad. So it goes beyond what you look like and into, it starts with what you look like and then goes into who you are. And that's where it gets really, that's where the disorder comes in, right? Because I think it's normal. And these days, like with a lot of recovery under my belt, there's certainly days that I look at myself and I think, well, I don't love that. But it's just that. I'm not a bad person because I can't zip my pants up, right? Or, you know, that's what I've been able to kind of pry off of myself in a way. And that really, that's to me what I would define as recovery, is just having a pretty typical, normal amount of bad feelings about yourself. You know, I don't walk around feeling great all the time, but I don't spiral into the kind of really difficult, really ugly feelings about who I am based on my looks. And that's what I wanted to be honest about, because I think people don't, and how would people who don't walk through that understand it, right? And a lot of the feedback that I've gotten about from the show, from people who, both people who have eating disorders and then people who love people who have eating disorders, like, is like, oh yes, that's what it feels like. Or, oh yes, now I understand what someone's been trying to tell me, you know? And so that was kind of the goal, is just to be honest about it in that way.
More with Annie Weissman in a minute. I've really been sitting with this idea of taking the most brutal mental health experiences you've had and turning them into art. Because one, it's a way of reversing the power. You are now in charge. You're driving the ship instead of those mental health experiences. And second, it's an act of generosity to share what you've been through with others so that others may be helped. And that reminds me of our talk with Dr. Lori Santos from the Happiness Lab on last week's episode of this show. If you can extend yourself to be generous to others, it becomes a benefit to yourself. Just ahead, most people never knew that Annie Weissman had an eating disorder until her new show premiered, and that's how she told them.
Oh my gosh, hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture trivia podcast, Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play games like motivational speeches. It goes a little like this. Riley, give us an improvised motivational speech on why people should listen and subscribe to Troubled Waters.
I look around this ad and I see a lot of potential to listen to comedians such as Jackie Johnson and Josh Gondelman, and they need you to get out there and listen to them attempt to figure out sound rebus clues or determine if something is a Game of Thrones character or a city in Wales.
I have chills. I'm going to give you 15 points. All that and so much more on Troubled Waters. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you choose to listen to podcasts.
Back with Annie Weissman, creator of the Apple TV Plus series Physical. The show is inspired and informed by her experience with eating disorders. I always get a little tripped up on the plural of eating disorders, because it seems like such a broad category, but then I'm also loath to pigeonhole it too narrow and to oversimplify it.
Yeah.
But is what you experienced what we would know as bulimia? Was that always your thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
That was.
And how far back does that go for you?
Back starting as a teenager, starting with my coming into adolescence, puberty, which was very, very late for me, much later than everybody else I knew. So that was like my first experience of having a body that looked different from everyone and then kind of going through the changes everyone else went through about 5 years after everyone else did. Sort of feeling like you didn't fit, feeling like, you know, I didn't have the right body at any given time, you know.
A hyper awareness of what was wrong about you.
Right.
In that way of thinking.
Yeah.
And then how long was it between then and when you started to get some help and get into recovery?
A very long time. It took me until I was 30 years old to start to get help about it. So it was a very long time.
20s.
Whole 20s. Yeah.
It's a hell of a decade.
That's right.
Anyway, let alone to have something like that going on. When I've spoken with people who've dealt with anorexia, who've dealt with bulimia, they say, you know, it's a little different than a substance use disorder. You can never have heroin again, and that's good. That's preferable. That's what you need to do, but you need to eat something.
Yeah.
And so like you're always kind of eating the drug anyway.
Yeah.
You're always introducing this problematic thing. So is it a thing that you consider yourself recovered from, or is it a daily get up in the morning and manage it all day kind of thing?
I really do consider myself and feel recovered. Now, like I said, I think I have a very normal amount of discomfort around my body and food, you know?
Self-consciousness.
Self-conscious. Yeah. Don't let, you know, I'm dealing with aging now. I'm dealing with other things. But I agree with that. You know, it's definitely true that there are a lot of similarities with and parallels that are really helpful with addiction. But then there are these big differences, the main one being that you kind of have to shake hands and make friends with this, yeah, the substance that has been so difficult for you for so long. You have to develop a healthy relationship with it. Or, you know, healthy seems like a hard thing to say because that makes it seem like you have to be perfect all the time. And it's just a normal, balanced relationship with it, I think. So it's challenging in that way. And that's why I think group therapy is so important. Talking to other people is so important because there's so much support and help out there. There's more now than there was when I was younger. But I think I consider myself really better. And that took a long time, you know, and it was a combination of psychiatric care, medication, and therapy, and also group therapy. And medication was really important for me and helped me a lot, especially early on. There were cycles of thinking that I had learned to kind of get out of and break, obsessive thinking. And medication really helped break those cycles. And it's something I hear about, you know, on your show, I hear a lot of people talk about, creative people too.
Jumping in here to play another clip. In season 2 of Physical, Sheila has an experience with group therapy and with putting up shields and putting on an act, as sometimes, unfortunately, happens in therapy. This clip has Rose Byrne as Sheila, Allison Wright as the therapist.
When I see what recovery really looks like, I'd rather be back on the bathroom floor with my arms around the fucking toilet.
You did it. It's done. Now go.
Sheila, wait.
Are you crazy? They hate you now. You are hated. Go.
You know what's cool about having this particular mental illness? There's nothing anyone can say to you, no matter how vile, that you haven't already said to yourself.
In the show that you made in Physical, without giving away too much for people who haven't seen it, there is a therapy process. And something that is made very clear is it lasts forever. It's very time consuming. And I really loved it because there wasn't that, you know, I love the movie Good Will Hunting, but it was full of these psychological epiphanies that change everything and then you're fine. And I found your show to be much more like more of the experiences I've heard of, like, just a lot of friggin' work to do.
It's hard work, yeah.
Yeah. Was that how it was for you personally, that there wasn't like an oh my God moment? There was just a whole lot of fucking work?
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, there were, you know, moments I can pick out that were really important to me. Like, I think right away, the one about feeling like the first times I would tell people about it and have a really kind of accepting response. That was really important to me because that helped break the lie that I was telling myself that, like, well, no one will ever love you if they know this about you. It's all they'll right. think about when they know you now. And, you know, right. those things turn
because
out
you're
not
a bad
to be
person.
True. Yeah.
It'll
and it's like that voice self-fulfilling. Yeah. telling you those lies. But I think, yes, for sure, it was important to me to be honest about the recovery experience was just, yeah, it's a lot of time. It's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of backsliding and there aren't really shortcuts. And obviously, like, I think a lot of storytelling, you know, you want to encourage people to erase stigma and to seek help. But maybe I also want to be honest about what it takes.
Yeah. So when you made this show, you were drawing on your own experiences with mm-hmm. bulimia. You were obviously drawing on your experiences as a TV writer. Was this like how you were going to choose to come out to the world by making it all premiere on Apple TV Plus?
Well, I didn't really think that through entirely, to be honest.
Okay.
You know, I'm a writer, so I kind of hide behind things. I was just going to kind of write this story and hope to get to make it. And then when the publicity process began, I kind of made a game time decision to just be honest and get out in front of it with my own story and life. And I think I did that partly out of a little bit of an impulse to kind of protect Rose Byrne, who, you know, here she is doing this incredible job embodying this character. You know, I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. I'm hiding. I'm on the page. Mm-hmm. She's doing it. You know, she's actually doing all these things on camera. She's being vulnerable. She's putting herself into these situations. And I feel really protective of that process. I have enormous respect for her and what she's putting herself through to do it because actresses have so much more exposure and vulnerability in this business than writers
and
do
scrutiny.
As women, the scrutiny they're under. And so I think I had a kind of little bit of a sort of maternal impulse as the creator of this thing to kind of get out in front of it and be like, you know, this is my story. I didn't think through the fact that there were people in my life, people who are close to me that I care about, that were going to be reading about this for the first time in the paper online. And that happened. And I'm still kind of dealing with the fallout of that because that wasn't the best way to do it. And I wish I had been more thoughtful in reaching out to people first. But I ended up having to, you know, clean that up a little bit in my life. I'm still doing it.
Were people surprised? Like, did people really have no idea that you were going through that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Huh. I was really good at hiding it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hell of a journey to go from this thing that you keep inside of you, this secret that you keep from even people who you love and who love you, to Rose Byrne acting it out on the screen.
I know. Yeah.
How are you doing?
Well, it was incredibly gratifying in so many ways. I mean, I think I really do highly recommend digging into what's scariest in your life creatively. I think there is so much to be gained. The connections that I've made to people, the kind of the deepening of a lot of friendships and relationships, that's really happened. It has opened the door for those conversations. Strangers and people who are close in my life. There are people who've been amazing about it. But honestly, it's also been hard, you know, because there were times even in the process of making it where, you know, I was on set all the time. I promised Rose I would be, and I was. And I would sit in my car sometimes, you know, sometimes Rose would go, "Where's Annie?" And they'd be like, "I think she's in her car," you know, and I just needed a minute because it was a lot to be, you know, unearthing again things I felt I was past in my life. And then here they come. And, you know, the origins of certain things, part of it is the show's about what I was doing was digging into where this comes from. And a lot of that is painful stuff. And so I believe in doing it. I think there's a lot to be gained for me and for others and in being honest, but the process is hard. You know, I feel like I need to be honest about that too. You know, there are times when you just feel really raw and you feel that it's tough.
I mean, and this is the kind of stuff I like to ask people about, because the access to creativity is completely democratic. Like, anybody can sit down at a computer or in a notebook and write out their thoughts. You know, people can draw a picture. People can, mm-hmm. you know, write a song. Like, there's a lot of ways to take the pain that you've dealt with and try to explore it through creativity, through art that you can do. And we might not all make a show starring Rose Byrne, because she's mm-hmm. awfully busy. She can't make a show with all of us. But what has this taught you about sort of exploring that part of yourself by doing this on such a large scale that you think other people might be able to learn from?
Over and over again, I find that the things that I do, because, you know, when I listen to the impulse that says, okay, this is scary, but it's true, I'm going to do it, that's where the best material is. And that's where I feel like most gratified and proudest. You know, I hope that's something people can relate to and learn from, because, you know, we all know that moment where you kind of make a choice between, like, I think this feels safe or what people would like, and then versus like that. And then like, I'm going to try to go out over here on this ledge and like do this thing I'm not sure about and kind of scared of, but because I think it's really true, you know, and I think it's really real. That's where the show lives. And that's where, like, the best connections come from. I think that's why the people who come to it and care about it and like it do, because that's where it came from.
Coming up, how do you draw boundaries between you and the thing that you make that is also about you? And if people hate your show, do they hate you?
Hey there, beautiful people. I'm Travelle Anderson.
And I'm Jared Hill. We are the hosts of Fantai, the show where we have complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives, the things that we really, really love sometimes, but also have some problematic feelings about.
Yes, we get into it all. You want to know our thoughts about Nicki Minaj and all her foolishness? We got you. You want to know our thoughts about gentrification and perhaps some positive aspects of gentrification? We get into that too. Every single Thursday, you can check us out at MaximumFun.org. Listen, you know you want it, honey, so come on and get it. Period.
Back with Annie Weissman, creator of Physical, I asked her how she protected herself, how she drew lines between herself, the stories on the show, and the business enterprise of the show.
Had some really good mentors in TV who've, you know, I've seen it done badly and I've seen it done really well, having creative boundaries, you know, in theater and in TV, you know, because I think coming up, there are a lot of examples of people who sort of like didn't have boundaries between their personal life and their work. It was almost like really celebrated, you know, to be that way, you know, a little bit.
Give yourself over entirely.
Yeah. And to sort of like, everything is work, everything is life, you know, the blurring of the boundaries and all of that. And then I've worked with some really great creative people. Jason Kadams is one of them, who just had really sharp, really good boundaries in his life between the personal and the work, but I was also doing like really deep, really good work, really high quality work, you know, because I think there was a part of me, especially coming from theater, that thought that people who behaved that way were sort of punching the clock and they were hacks, you know, but it, you know, so I do that too. You know, you try to have that, just remember that at the end of the day, we're making television and then we go home and we have our life. But I will say that I'm still figuring it out in terms of the boundaries of just what I'm, you know, revealing about myself and in terms of my own history, my own mental health, you know, because I think it can be beneficial to others to be more honest, to be more open. So I think I've let that boundary up a little, like obviously in this conversation, talking more. Because I think I hope we can touch others. I hope we can reach others. I know that when people told stories like this to me, when I was really deep in it and really deep in a lot of shame, it was helpful. So I'm trying to do that more. But yeah, to be honest, I am still figuring out what that all means in terms of like the boundaries of my life, because I have, it's a little scary. You know, I feel a little scared of how it gets a little out of your control. And then, you know, there are people who don't like it. There are people who don't like the show. People don't like me. You know, that's part of what you expose yourself to. And so there's that part too. It's not all a big warm hug. You know, there's a lot of people are like, there's a little bit of a how dare you response, or there's some people who don't. And, you know, you got to deal with that too. So
there's the inexplicable entertainment thing where people get mad at you for making a thing that they themselves don't like. I've just never understood that.
I'm know. Like,
then don't watch
you
it.
You know, you
don't
have be the option of not making... watching it, right? It's pretty interesting sometimes, because while the stuff, the people who don't like it, it definitely is painful, but it's also like hilarious how kind of self-fulfilling it is, because it kind of represents what the show's about. You know, so much about how she has to keep her anger and her ugliness inside because of the fear of being rejected. And then here come people sort of rejecting it for being honest about exactly those things. And it just, I kind of go, do you see what you're doing there? I don't think you do, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, and people knock the character in the show for seemingly having it all together and being mm-hmm. perfect in every way, and the thing in the show is that obviously she doesn't, and then
that's right,
and then it's like, oh well, how can Rose Byrne have any problems? Well, of course she has problems. She's
yeah,
a human being.
It's kind of the point, you know, is that you don't understand who she is by looking at her on the outside. And so that was so key to what the show was about. So when someone kind of faults you for exactly what you're doing, you just kind of have to shrug and go, okay, well, I'm glad we live in a time in television where everything doesn't have to be for everybody.
Right. Well, and she's so good too. Like I'm often just stunned by like, oh my God, the thing she's doing, so many levels.
It's true.
You talk about being on the set with her and being mm-hmm. on the set whenever anything's being filmed. And we've talked about this protagonist antagonist thing, this voice in her head. How would you film those scenes? Like if she needs,
yeah.
if she in on set needs to be hearing that voice
right.
of herself, how does that happen?
Yeah. So exactly. So when we got into production, I had that same thought. I thought, I don't know. I didn't really think about how we're going to do this, you know? And so I talked to a couple of people who do shows that have like a lot of voiceover in them and asked them how they do it. And someone told me something I thought was interesting that we decided to try, which is that when we're shooting, Rose's stand-in would say the voiceover lines so that we would know the timing. And then we record a temporary voiceover with another actor and use that in post when I'm editing the episode together. And then when we have the episode all locked and set, we go into a recording booth, just Rose and I, and we record it. So she listens to it. She listens for the timing. She listens to the temporary thing. We talk about it, and then she records it, and we lay that in to picture. So anyway, that's the process that we've evolved. And we have different conversations together in this recording booth, in this like really intimate space, about what this moment requires. And we've kind of developed this shorthand of different kind of characters that the voice plays, because it's almost like, like you say, it's an antagonist. We started to talk about the voice as if it's kind of like, it's a representation of her eating disorder in a way. And it's like an abusive boyfriend, you know? So it's something, it has different tactics, right? Because its goal is to stay there and not lose its job. So it kind of like changes tactics different times. Sometimes it's really mean and abusive. Other times it's kind of ingratiating and kind and gentle, like giving you presents and telling you, like love bombing you and stuff. And so we've developed all these different ways of talking about it as we lay it in. I mean, one of the funny things is that just doing the scenes when we're shooting them, and then sometimes the voiceover is so mean about not only herself, but other people. And that enters the space while we're shooting the scene, and the actors just have to kind of do their jobs and ignore it. But sometimes it's just funny because it's the filtered, you know, it's what we filter in life, you know, and don't say.
As a writer and as a playwright and as a screenwriter, do you approach the internal voices that she hears as a separate character?
Yeah, I kind of do its own, my own pass on it, its own energy. I end up kind of doing one kind of voice, inner voice pass on it. And I feel it, that it is a separate character in the show. And it's continuing to evolve through the seasons. We're doing, working on season 3 now, and it's got a different, a very different form now.
Was it a different character in your experience with your own internal voice?
Yeah, it changed a lot. You know, when I was very young, I remember having this voice in my head that was like a kind of like a wicked witch. And I don't really talk about this a lot because it makes me feel like nervous to talk about it because it sounds kind of crazy, but it was like a wicked witch. It kind of had its own character. It was just very, very mean and kind of scary. And I do sort of wonder where that came from. You know, I do kind of go, I think it sort of came from the world a little bit, like came from movies or came from TV. You know how you're sort of picking things up.
So Wicked Witch, like a Margaret Hamilton.
Yeah, kind voice? Of Margaret Hamilton-y. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Huh.
Very mean to me. And then it kind of turned into, I don't know, I think at times my inner voice is just kind of, I don't know, it's just me, the things I'm filtering. But almost like a, I don't know, sometimes it just, even with Rose, we do this, there's almost like a Shecky Green quality sometimes, it's a little like one-liners, kind of just kind of sticky and one-linery and like, just, I don't know, like all the things you think.
Yeah, well, jerks are prone to wisecracks, I suppose.
Yeah, wisecracks and that kind of stuff.
Now, often the experience of a mental illness, any kind of mental illness, can be mm-hmm. really quiet and repetitive and tedious. How do you stay true to the reality of different mental health conditions? Like with Sheila's bulimia, how do you make those dramatically viable while staying true to the kind of non-dramatic quality that they have?
Yeah, that's a challenge. The show is, you know, because you are always having to prioritize story, you know, so it's really just focusing on conflict and story and action and keeping that alive while just kind of staying true to the experience of the person inside of that. You know, I was experiencing a pretty intense mental illness for a lot of my late teens and 20s. Other things were happening too, you know. Life was happening too. So it doesn't become the only experience, even though it's really intense and powerful. All the other things in life are happening at the same time too.
Yeah. As you mentioned, Physical has been renewed for a third season, and congratulations on
Thank
that.
Thank you.
How have your nerves been about the reception to this thing? Because it is patently autobiographical and you're putting it out into the world and you're saying, okay, write a review of this and how are the numbers looking? Like that's a hell of a judgment.
It is. Nothing was as hard as when we first premiered. I think that sort of inoculated me because just putting it out there in the world for the first time, sink or swim, and not knowing, you know, when you have so much personally invested in it, you just can't pretend you're not going to be devastated if it doesn't connect. But seeing it build a following and seeing it build. And, you know, we had some rough responses early on, but we also, it was always really mixed, you know, which I anticipated it would be. Didn't really anticipate universal acclaim, but
doesn't
I think for me, you know, and I think it wouldn't be a surprise to anyone who watches the show, like criticism feels comfortable, not like I enjoy it, but I know how to do that. You know, I know how to take blows. I know how to take mean words. You know, that is something I know how to put my dukes up and fight. Like I've been doing that to myself my whole life. So there's a part of me that says like, you think you can criticize me? Do you know what I say to myself?
I'm the master.
Like, you can't even get close. Not even close to what I say about myself. Go ahead. ahead and try, Mr. Variety. You know, so it's like, in a way, I'm sort of protected by my own difficulties and struggles. So, you know, I've been through that and I've survived it. And so you kind of go, yeah, you know what? It's not for everybody. But the people, I've had so many really meaningful, you know, sometimes reviews, but also just reach outs from people who, you know, it means something to, who get it. And that just kind of keeps you going. That's really rewarding. That's why you do it, you know, at the end of the day. And that's been building as we've had it out there. So it feels like we're over that hump.
Have people been kind of rediscovering the show in what, because I thought it was an aerobics show when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And then in preparation for this, I watched it and I watched the whole, both seasons, and I watched them very carefully. I'm like, oh my God, the aerobics, that's a delivery device.
Yeah.
To, you know, to something yeah. much deeper. Has it been hard to get people to realize just how deep this show goes?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the aerobics veneer, the 80s veneer, is kind of a Trojan horse for this
yeah.
story. And I've kind of always done that with my work. I think I like to be underestimated. And then sort of, I think I feel that way as a woman in the world a lot, you know, the sort of the outside doesn't always match the inside. And so I'm sort of comfortable creatively in that space of going like, you think this is one thing and it's something else. Hey, come in and see what it really is. And so I think, right. yeah, that's why the show's been building. I think that I know it's been building. They tell me, they show me the numbers and say it's building. And so the word of mouth is about, hey, there's substance here that you might not have thought there was. And so I quite enjoy that. You know, I quite enjoy that people don't necessarily know what depth is under the surface there and that they can discover it and then tell other people too.
If someone's listening to this and saying, okay, I'm thinking about writing something, writing a book, writing a TV show, doing a painting, whatever it is, that's going to really reveal this deep pain that I've had in my life, this deep problem that I've had in my life. I'm going to spring it on the world. I'm going to pour myself all the way into it. What advice would you give them?
I think I would say, figure out what only you can write. Figure out the way only you can do it. You know, how is this way of telling your truth unique to you? Because I think the temptation is to kind of look out in the world and see what everyone else is doing and sort of find your place in it. But just really looking inside and going, how can I write the thing that only I can write, you know? And then no one can kind of take that from you. And it's not just in the content of what you have to say, but in the way you have to say it. And just, you know, dig in and figure that out. It takes some time to kind of put those two things together, you know, what you want to say and how you want to say it.
That's Annie Weissman. The first two seasons of Physical are now on Apple TV+. Next time on Depression Mode, Dr. Ken Duckworth, the medical director for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He says you don't need a degree in psychiatry to be a mental health expert.
Then you talk to someone else who realized that paper plates were life-changing. And she said, well, I had bipolar disorder, and I was at a support group, and I said, I can't manage my kitchen. And at the support group, I learned two words that changed my life. Paper plates. She said, I never did another dish while I was raising my kids, and my bipolar disorder was under poor control. Here I am, a double board certified psychiatrist with theoretically, you know, good qualifications to help people. And paper plates was like, there's expertise from living with things that we have underappreciated. We doctors, we mental health professionals, we academicians, and I thought, I just got to keep going.
If people support our show, we can have a show. I like having a show. It's easy to support Depression Mode. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join and select Depression Mode from the list of shows. Find a level that works for you, and then you are making this happen. If you are already a donor, Thank you so much. Your support means everything. It makes this show possible. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available in the United States by calling 988 or 1-800-273-8255. That's 1-800-273-TALK. The Crisis Text Line, also free, always available. Text the word HOME to 741-741. Please do these things. Hit subscribe on this podcast. Give us 5 stars. Write rave reviews, please. And also, if you want to get in touch with us with any of your thoughts, please use our electric mail address, depressionmode@maximumfun.org. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. I like to hang out there, visit with folks, and good conversation happening there, sometimes about what was on the show, sometimes about something else. I'm on Twitter @JohnMoe. Our Depression Mode newsletter is on Substack. Search that up, you'll find it. Hello, credits listeners. The Tower of London employs a full-time raven master. This person lets the ravens out in the morning, cleans their cages during the day, puts them to bed at night. The search for the raddest job title of all time has concluded. Raven Master. Also works for prog rock bands and Dungeons & Dragons characters. Depression Mode is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. We got booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out, building wings, building wings, building wings.
Hi, this is Becca from Worcester, Massachusetts. I want you all to know that it helps me to know that you are here with me and we are in this together.
Depression Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.